You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
Welcome to It's Nearly the 5 o'clock Shadow with David Shapiro from Sassman Securities and Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. Now, last week we started the show, or I did, with a quote attributed to Donald Trump. And it was an astonishing start to the show because the quote was astonishing, more than astonishing, actually. And this week we're going to start with something even more astonishing, and that's David Shapiro's post on LinkedIn, by the way. It says here, a snapshot of the latest quarterly results for Meta, Microsoft, Alphabet and Amazon showing their revenue, profit and planned spending are below. And the one that I go to here is Amazon. Quarterly revenue, $181.5 billion. Operating profit, $30.3 billion. Now, David, these are the sort of numbers that a small country would be proud of.
That's exactly the point. As I was going through them en masse, you know, I looked at them all together. And when you look at it, you just understand the astonishing size of these companies, the incredible amount of revenue that they create, and also the huge amount of money that they're spending. And, you know, that is going into the U.S. economy. And just to follow it up, which I've only got the numbers now, if you look at the first quarter GDP numbers in the U.S., the amount of business spending that has gone up, I mean, it's a staggering amount, 10%, which is all the amount of money that is going into data centers. And you know, Viv's going to come in there. He knows a lot more than I do. But, I mean, what's from AI bubble at the end of last year to where we are now, that there's just enough power, is not enough compute power, and there might not be enough data centers in order to satisfy the demand for AI or the processing. You know, it gives you an idea of the power, number one, of the of AI, of what this new economy is, and also of the United States, of these businesses.
It's amazing. It is amazing, David. You referenced the US GDP number. It came out and the US economy grew by 2% in the first quarter. And of course, the first quarter is going to be impacting the second quarter and beyond because of the war in Iran. But it's still a good, steady number. But if you want to finish, David, and then we'll go to Viv, because I've got a sort of an analogy to make about what I'm seeing, because they're going to be spending $700 billion on AI capex next year. I mean, it's only $30 billion, and Viv mentioned a couple of weeks ago, but still, it's a massive amount, isn't it, David?
Well, if you consider the whole of the South African economy, that's what I wanted to highlight, is $400 billion. You know, that's the South African economy, and they're spending it, I don't know, in a quarter, in a half a year, not even. They're spending it. This is one small business or one business. It just gives you an idea of how big this really is and the competition around it. And that's why I say you cannot afford. There's huge criticism about Meta and how much they're spending and whether or not they'll be successful, but they can't afford not to. You know, they can't fall out the race, nor can anybody, nor any company in that area. So this is going to go on. And I think the other thing is just, yes, these companies are spending, but they're also making massive amounts of money.
Okay, they're making massive amounts of money, Viv, but are they spending the money on CapEx because the other companies are spending the money on CapEx, as David suggested? I'm saying it, he suggested it.
Look, I mean, there's a couple of things to think about here, first of all. So $700 billion, and I think I mentioned to you guys in the past, if you just do the calculations, right, $700 billion translates to probably they need about maybe just over a trillion or so to basically make this a valid investment. I mean, you need probably well more than a trillion, but let's just say it's a trillion to make this $700 billion a profitable investment. For them to raise get $1 trillion worth of revenue, they've got to basically generate somewhere between $10 to $20 trillion worth of GDP growth to basically harvest that amount of revenue, if you know what I mean. You can't basically get all of what you make in the world back as your own revenue. You've got to basically make it a deal for everybody else as well. And generally, software companies get less than 5% in terms of the efficiencies, the productivity they add to the world back as revenue. So just to say it's 10%. That's $10 trillion. That's 10% of global GDP just on this year's spend. I mean, that's the numbers we are talking about. Now, the other side, we have seen growth in basically the amount of revenue these companies have, not particularly like Google or Facebook, but like the Anthropic, where we are seeing, for instance, they predicted to have somewhere in the region of $100 billion of revenue by the end of this year. Okay, this is from $100 million at the start of 2024. So in 3 years' time, going from $100 million to $100 billion, that's a 1,000 times increase. Okay, that's roughly 10 times a year. So all these numbers just are unprecedented. This is the logic behind this is unprecedented. I honestly believe, and this is something out there, I think I told you guys before, this is not quite a business decision for these companies. I don't think Mark Zuckerberg is investing in AI as a pure business decision, because he could get access to a lot of these models at a far cheaper cost than developing his own Llama model. The reason Facebook has Llama is not just to basically become an AI company. It's because that allows Facebook to do more with the data it gets in. The reason that Google is developing Gemini is not just because of that, you know, it's considered as an LLM and whatnot, because it's not the most popular LLM out there. It's also to help it with its own search and own advertising business, etc. But even with these kind of like synergies, the reason these guys are doing it is almost, I believe, religious. And I use that term, advisedly.
Yes.
I think that these guys almost have a religious belief that they are creating something that is going to basically win the future. To quote another, you know, genius leader of states, Vladimir Putin, and this was a few years ago, by the way, he says, the one that wins AI wins the world. Okay, and I think that's the belief these guys have. Mm-hmm. They believe if you win AI, no matter what your cost is, no matter what the circumstances is, you're the first to get AGI or ASI or whatever, you have pretty much won humanity. You won the game of humans and you, or civilization, whatever you call it. And whatever the cost to get there, getting there is worth the price. And I think that is what we're looking at right now. And the one more thing I would put out there is I think Dennis Hassabis, which is the guy that runs Google DeepMind, the AI division of Google, says he believes we are about, I think, 2/3 or 3/4 of the way to AGI already. And that is a remarkable kind of statement. This is what we're dealing with. These guys will spend as much as required. They will risk bankruptcy, as I think it was Larry Page said, he'll risk bankruptcy to have a chance of being the one that gets to AGI. And that's the kind of spend we're doing here. Are these companies good investments? Maybe not. Companies that really want to be buying as the companies that make the chips that these guys need to buy. The NVIDIAs, the Microns, and so on. Those are the guys that are really guaranteed to make money. These guys are playing for, you know, all or nothing kind of stakes.
Okay, there's a phrase I'll come back to you on in a couple of years' time. Guaranteed to make money, Viv. But anyway, that's for another time. David, when you saw all those results, if you had a blank sheet and you had a new client's money, would you say to that client, yes, we have to go for this one, or none of them? They're too overpriced. They're spending too much capex. Mm. What did you think when you saw those numbers?
I get very nervous when we come to this period every 3 months, simply because I think that many times analysts always set the bar too high. And when I look at the size of these companies, you say, well, how can they keep generating this quarter after quarter and growing it quarter after quarter? And that's why I get very nervous that somewhere along the line they're going to trip over a wire or something's going to happen. And yet here you are. Here they came out with these numbers again. Sure, Meta, there was more concerns not about the absolute numbers but about what they're spending and around whether they can recover it, whether it's too much, whoever knows. And Viv, I think, has summarized it well. You know, it is. There's a lot of ego involved in this, wanting to rule the world, and these are the kind of characters that run these businesses. But I can't avoid it at the moment. I must tell you that just you asked me the question, will I still buy? Of course I will buy. And that's because I'm getting very nervous of the rest of the world, you know, with oil at these kind of levels and the delay that this is going to, that that finding peace in Iran is going to cause. And oil price in the 110 to 120 is very difficult for me to digest. My only qualification is, what I'm also scared of is that somewhere along the line, this might bleed into sentiment on the tech market. In other words, it might become too hot, you know, too difficult to handle, and it might have some impact. But for the meantime, I've just been looking at Quanta Services results, and they provide electricity. You know, they providing the power to the data centers. I mean, if you look at GE Vernova, all these businesses, one that we guarded, which was Siemens Energy, you know, all of a sudden they're back in fashion and doing incredibly well. So, Lindsay, that's your supply chain. You know, those are the companies. Anything related to the building of data centers, you've got to have. You know, okay. When I say you've got
so
to
So is the game now, David, not looking at the big ones that you mentioned in your LinkedIn article, which I recommend everybody goes to. It's the auxiliary services companies.
As well.
Yeah. Are those the ones? Are there some nuggets out there that haven't yet been discovered, or have they all been mined already?
No, no, there are nuggets in that area, but you've got to do your work, because there's a whole list of them that I went through, and suddenly you're confronted in the same way as the medical profession, but I think in this case they're going to do well with a good 10, you know, to 15 businesses that are related, that are all going to provide power and will get contracts, and that who, you know, they're going to be a lot of winners in this area. And, you know, doing it at the expense of old economy. And I must admit, as a person who's loved luxury, I'm getting a bit edgy. You know, I looked at Booking.com's, listening to Booking.com CEO, you know, and yeah, there's a slowdown in travel. There's a slowdown in a lot of areas. Which are,
of course there is, because airline tickets are 25% minimum higher. I mean, you can't fly cheaply anymore. These prices are unbelievable. Viv, I want to move on to you, because I wrote a brief to somebody with whom I'm doing a podcast next week, and he said, well, just pretend you're somebody that wants to invest in my fund. What are you worried about? So I said the following, Viv. Listen to this. As a consumer investor and potential investor, I'm worried, no, terrified of the following. There's a war in the Middle East that might drag on for weeks or months, given the intransigence of the parties involved. To me, the near doubling of the oil price has implications yet to be fully felt, e.g. rising fuel and energy prices, higher mortgage rates, fertilizer up, bond yields creeping north, so inflation to soar, and interest rates too. So food, fuel, energy, shelter, all higher and maybe going much higher. I don't think you understand what a prolonged period of high oil prices and the destruction of the world order means, and yet it's on a plate before us. That's what I'm putting forward as to this person, Viv. And I know it sounds very simple, but there's some decent points there, I think.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. I mean, we are in a remarkable time in which, as you mentioned, we are seeing a real shift in the global order, you know, with the U.S. kind of losing its mind, you know, in effect, over the last year or so, you know, going against allies, damaging the relationship it has with its main allies in Europe, with things like Greenland, basically, obviously, blowing up the Middle East as it has done, against the wishes of its, you know, allies in the Middle East as well as in Europe. At the same time, we have the biggest technological revolution in our lifetimes by far. And I'm including David in this, you know what I mean? We have not seen anything that is equivalent to this since electricity at the very least, and possibly since the Industrial Revolution. And some people even say far back as fire. This is one of the greatest technological you know, opportunities in history. And historically, this is when the fortunes are made. You have the railway barons, you have the billionaires of the car maker Ford, you have the internet guys, you have the computer guys like, you know, Bill Gates, etc. When you have new technologies come about, that's when you have the supernormal profits, that's when you have the supernormal, you know, fortunes being created. And unfortunately, in this current environment, despite the risk, as David mentioned, you just can't be out of the market. You just can't be, you know, what you call this, away from these growing sectors. You may go for a bit of a bifurcated policy where you basically have an investment strategy where you have a certain amount of money that you put aside in a more safe, you know, to a stable kind of investments or, you know, to segments. But you have to have a certain portion of your money allocated to these high growth, high risk segments, because the opportunity cost would be just too great if they do take off like they have over the last couple of years.
David, you were speaking about a film called Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and I can't remember exactly what the scene was that you were describing, but I'll come to this. I don't know if you've ever seen a cartoon where there's two characters, one called Wile E. Coyote and the other one is Roadrunner, and they have this thing where the coyote tries to trip up the Roadrunner as he's running along, etc. And of course we know what's going to happen, but it's still fun to watch. And it's also really fun to watch Wile E. Coyote get to the edge of the cliff, and you know what's going to happen. He's going to plummet to the bottom. Now, is there any chance that we're all Wile E. Coyotes, or rather people like you and Viv are Wile E. Coyotes, and at some point they're going to say, no, the market participants are going to say, no, it's far too much money, you can't justify it, and the oil price is this and everything else that I've just spoken about, and he falls off the cliff, or rather the market participants do. Any chance, David, if there is a chance, are you ready for it?
Oh, yeah. I've been in markets long enough. One day these things do slow down. But for the meantime, I think it's only now gathering momentum. And that's why you've got to you know what? You can't ignore it. You can't wait for that time to come. What you do have to do, and I always say this, you have to be in a situation where when you start to see the signs, get out. You know what I mean? Just press the button, get out. And that's the beauty of stock markets today. You know, you're not in a fund where you're trapped, where it's going to take 6 months, or a hedge fund, or all these other products that are around, you know, that I don't even understand, but have got some very clever around who construct all kinds of derivative strategies. You can't get out of those. The beauty is now. And if you want to do anything, and you know, I could illustrate it for you, but I'm not going to. But what happens is that you can put an order on; they get executed almost immediately with some of the big platforms. You know what happens? They don't go onto the market and then deal. They do it, and then obviously they trade on that order and try cover it in or whatever it is. So that for me is absolute paramount, is liquidity. In other words, be liquid. Be able to get out literally at the touch of a button.
Okay, so you're ready for it. Viv, are you ready for it?
And
Viv, do you concur with what David has said?
Yeah, look, I mean, I would say, forget a chance. Every single time in history we've had one of these things happen, it's been you've had a crash. I mean, the railways, when the US built the railways, when we had the build-out of the broadband, also the fiber optic internet, always you have overinvestments, you have a crash, and then basically what you have is the initial investors, or the initial basically people that built the railroads or built the fiber optic networks, basically having to sell at a discount, which is great for the world because now you have cheap railways and you have cheap fiber optics or whatever you have out there. But it's been the history. This time might be different just because the technology is so powerful that we don't know what the end looks like. But historically, when we do have these massive infrastructure build-out on new technologies, you tend to find overinvestment and then a crash. As to what the strategy should be, look, I'm not so confident as David that I can find out when it's going to actually stop. Because you see, I mean, this year alone, we've had massive pullbacks in the stocks, and then they come back again, roaring up. And last year, the same thing happened. I mean, in the, the Bitcoin guys call it? The halvings? Where basically every so often the stock, the price of Bitcoin halves, and then you hold through it and it goes back up again. So long as the technology continues to improve, that's my only requirement. As long as the technology continues to improve, I stay invested. When I see evidence that the technology no longer improves at the current rate, then I would say you pull out. And fortunately, the technological improvement has been excellent by every measure that you can see out there. You know, you've seen this thing improve. And if you don't see it improve, unfortunately for you, it's basically improved beyond your capacity to understand it, if you know what I mean. I don't know if I mentioned Terence Tao before in the past, the guy that's the best mathematician in the world. And he was talking about how mathematicians at the moment, because of the new models, are going through the five stages of grief. And right now, many guys are stuck in denial about how powerful these new computers are, new programs are. And this is the cutting edge of mathematics. And he's saying he's finding these programs now able to do stuff that basically they weren't able to do in the past, and actually able to be an asset in mathematical research. You find the same thing happening in biology, the same thing happening in physics. And the real thing that I think people have, the next step change is going to be robotics. You've got to see the new videos coming out where robots are handling
positions. He always comes back to robots, doesn't he, David? He always comes back to robots. Sorry, Viv, I interrupted you. I've got to see the videos of what did you say? I missed that.
Of the latest robots, yeah. In the past, they used to speed these things up. Now they've got to slow them down so you can see what's happening. In the past, you'd see robots moving and they'd have to speed them up because they were so slow to make it look more impressive. Now they're slowing them down so you can see what they're doing. That's the difference. And why do I say robots? Because I've always said that the only way you're going to have like the $10 trillion plus GDP growth rates we're discussing, that has to come from physical AI. It won't come from, new, sort of software that writes you better, poems or does videos, or whatever it may be. That doesn't create things. It has to be science. It has to be physical. That's the only way you can imagine, a 10% plus GDP growth rates.
Okay. Mm. Gentlemen, this is the only podcast. Go on, David.
There's something I just wanted to say, in terms of how far do we stretch it? We picked up when ChatGPT came out and we started to see the demand for NVIDIA. I don't even know what price NVIDIA was, whether today it's, call it $202 a share. Maybe it was at $10 at that time. That's how much it has grown. And the problem is that people can't handle growth. When it went from 10 to 20, I've doubled my money, I must get out. 20 to 40, I've had it, And we go along that with clients. They don't believe they're worthy of this company going up or that it will go up simply because of their past experience. It's now 202. I'm just looking on the screen. That's 1,000+% growth in the last couple of years. That's fine. It's still going ahead. It's still producing incredible chips. It's still at the forefront of the development. Yes, there's going to be competition and odd times and that. But what happens is that clients can't handle it. We can't handle those kind of gains. And I'm saying even if it halved now, we would be up, 500% or whatever, even more than that. So you've got to you've got to keep measuring that as well. Okay, I've stayed in. How long do I go? Even if there is some kind of pullback or whatever it is, you're still far better off than you would have been had you've got out, when you first felt you should have got out.
We've been talking kind of thing. We've been talking about Hollywood, David. Yeah, there's a film called A Few Good Men. Jack Nicholson, what's his name, Tom Cruise, etc., Demi Moore. And one of the phrases from that, you can't handle the truth. So what you're saying is you can't handle the returns. That's what you're saying to certain investors.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
Well, they can't, and they always want to get out, take profits, and no one's ever lost money by taking a profit. All those old sayings, they're relevant and whatever it is. But where you're at the beginning of something like this, which is so exciting, just don't be impatient. Just go for the ride.
Very good.
Which is what I'm doing.
Very good. You can't handle the returns. I bet there's a lot of fund managers that would love to be able to say that to their clients. I think there's a few here amongst us. Now, gentlemen, this is the only podcast that has had two things said on it. Last week, Viv said, when I asked him where we are in AI, where at what point on the graph of AI are we? He said, imagine a chap in Manchester and he's just been given a steam engine. That's during the Industrial Revolution. And today, Viv took it even further back. He said, this is the most incredible thing probably since human beings discovered fire. So we've gone from steam to fire. I don't know where you're going to go next week, Viv. Maybe the splitting of the amoeba. Or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, thank you very much, gentlemen, for a really good show. Viv Govender, Isman Ranswiss, David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, and that was nearly the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.